welcome to another exciting episode of Pretentious Internet Theater. I'm your host, Andrew Cook. And I'm so vain, Carly Simon once wrote a song about me. It's true. I'd like to start off with a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. And I have to say, the evidence of that speaks for itself. Of course, it is the enthusiasm of, well, me, that allowed this show to go for 4 episodes in such a quick amount of time. And, well, I must give credit where credit is due. It's the enthusiasm of you, the listener, that emailed me. And, of course, I'd like to remind the rest of you, you can email me at pretentiousinternettheater@gmail.com. You email me based off of comments that I made from my last episode, in which I stated that I would not be reading a Kirk/Spock fan fiction called A Fragment Out of Time by Diane Merchant. Now, I was able to get the title, the author's name, by doing a simple Google search, and, well, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now, but I wanted to let you know that the only reason why I'm not reading it is because it's not on the internet. And quite honestly, I wanted to give something back to you Star Trek fans. This weekend, I believe a movie's coming out this weekend. It's called Star Trek, and it's directed by the great J.J. Abrams. Of course, I'm personally looking forward to seeing Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock fighting the smoke monster. Well, Chekhov stands in front of the hats and waits for a light to glow. And you know, some people ask me, they say, Andrew Cook, who is your favorite captain? Is it Kirk? Is it Picard? Kirk or Picard? Is it Sisko? Is it Archer? Is it Katharine Hepburn? You can throw in Pike and Sulu, for all I care. My favorite captain isn't even a captain at all, because Star Trek, this movie coming out, is complete crap. That's right. You people have to realize that, well, I mean, I haven't seen it. Oh, don't get me wrong, I'm going to see it 3 times and make sure that J.J. Abrams gets roll around in a big pile of money like Scrooge McDuck. But quite honestly, I've already formed an opinion of it, and I already know it's crap. Every single episode you see of Star Trek is nothing but hogwash. And I intend to be there in that movie theater with a memo pad and a pen so I can write down everything that is wrong with that movie and I can help you. Because quite frankly, you people know better, but some of the plebeians out there need to be educated. They need to know how to think. And quite frankly, I'm willing to take that task. My favorite captain isn't even a captain at all. He's a major. Major Seth Adams of Wagon Train. And do you think I could find any Wagon Train fan fiction to read to you all on Star Trek weekend? No, I'm not a one. I would have loved to have read some Wagon Train fan fiction to you. You're going to have to settle for some Star Trek fan fiction. I hope you can enjoy. I'm going to do my best. Pretentious Internet Theater is proud to bring you Quantam Trek, a Star Trek Enterprise Quantum Leap crossover, written by Dragonwriter, and found on fanfiction.net. A brilliant flash of light accompanied the transfer, and suddenly, Sam was in his ex-body. He looked around carefully, trying to get a bearing on his surroundings. He was in a cabin of some kind, closed in and with only one window. A small dog barked and held up a chewed tennis ball to be thrown. What the hell is going on here? He wondered, looking out the window and seeing stars pass by. Sam thought perhaps he was on the Apollo 13, and they were on their way to the moon. But that didn't seem right. There was gravity, for one, and as far as he could guess, there were no dogs on that flight. He waited for the PQL to pick up his location and send Al through. So far, nothing happened. This wasn't like him not to be there within a few minutes of the leap. Sam looked to the mirror next to a basin and saw, well, it was weird, but he saw himself. Usually, he saw the image of a body he possessed, but now, what was going on here? He looked around some more and noticed he was wearing a uniform of some sort, blue with short gold stripes on the shoulder, and 4 little buttons on his right shoulder. Just then, a flash! Someone was in the room with him. It wasn't Al, or anyone from the PQL staff, but it was some kid, probably 18 or 19, dressed in a casual daytime clothing. He might have been a college student from the way he carried himself. "Who are you?" Sam asked.
"My name is Dragonwriter," the man explained. "I have taken control of your leaping for just this one time. You may be interested to know this is actually a point in TV time 200 years from when Quantum Leap originally aired."
TV time? What the?
Have you ever heard of a show called Star Trek?
Sam thought for a minute. Yes, he had heard about it. He used to watch it nonstop when he was in college.
Well, I'm at a point in time where there is a new Star Trek, and it takes place before the original Star Trek in the 60s, Dragon Rider continued to explain. The fact is, I have this petty fear. You'll understand it more if I show you this.
With that, Dragon Rider pulled out a small device similar to Al's device and pressed a few buttons, causing the television to appear out of nowhere, along with a VCR and three blank tapes. Sam sat there, watching tape after tape. The first tape was a collection of episodes from the very first Star Trek, the one he grew up with. Then came another collection of tapes from TNG, DS9, and Voyager. Each episode featured a character from the previous series, and that new character always seemed to be flaunting him or herself to the extreme, i.e. Q when he appeared on DS9 and Voyager, and whenever Riker appeared on the show, etc. Dragon Rider was especially careful to make sure Sam watched the episode of Star Trek Voyager when they encountered the Temporal Federation of the Future. Then he turned to the next tape, Star Trek Enterprise. For all its intents and purposes, Star Trek Enterprise was better. The theme song was well done and inspiring. All new characters took the stage, and the setting for the show left no threatening crossovers. Until the Suliban showed up.
Temporal Cold War! Oh my god, Sam thought. It's in danger already!
Apparently, the Suliban sent someone back in time to mutate their own species. Now, in an episode much later, a man claimed to be from the future tries to stop these Suliban from further damaging the timeline.
Good gods, don't even mention the name Captain Braxton! Sam and Dragon Rider found themselves mirroring each other as they prayed for salvation from the dreaded crossover demons.
The episode was over, and Sam stood up and looked Dragon Rider straight in the eye.
Now you see, he said finally. Enterprise is the first Star Trek since Kirk time that actually has some credibility. Voyager and TNG don't hold a candle to this ship. And now the crossover demons threaten to take away all that credibility. I have for you now a mission.
I'm ready, Sam said with conviction.
Captain Archer, the man which you inhabit, his shift starts in an hour. Your crew is going to stumble upon a cheap plot device used a billion times in the past, an uncharted nebula. There you will understand the nature of your mission.
Very well. Anything else?
Yes, as a matter of fact, Dragon Rider pulled out a pen and pencil. A bunch of fellow fanfiction writers and Trekkies asked me a few things. I doubt it's possible, but... Well, just this one. Would you be nice that you could possibly see that T'Pol and Trip get together?
Sam smiled and put out his hand.
I'll sew what I can.
Dragon Rider took Sam's hand and shook it. Having watched his leapy on the recorded episodes, Archer took to the bridge with confidence, knowing everyone on sight, still unable to shake that song out of his head, so he ended up humming it as he sat in his chair.
Good morning, Captain, Lieutenant Reed spoke up from the Security Council.
Morning, Malcolm, Sam answered without a problem.
Thanks to DW's instruction, he knew to be cheerful and upbeat as always.
T'Pol stood up from her console.
Captain, there's a large uncharted nebula on our course. Shall I make some comment as to Vulcan protocol that you're going to argue till you're red in the face, or should we go in head first looking for a plot?
I think we'll go with number two, Sam decided with his authority's tone.
Again with the number two. Over in the corner, Ensign Mayweather fished through his pockets for his credit chip and handed it to Ensign Hoshi. Hoshi grinned wickedly as she extracted the amount equal to the bet. It was 50 credits that the captain and Picol argued about protocol. An hour later, the ship stopped a few kilometers from the nebula and began doing routine technology stuff that won't be explained here for the fear of tediousness. Sam guided Archer's body down to sickbay to see Dr. Phlox, who was standing ready to provide comic relief at a moment's notice.
Doctor, I need a small favor of you, he said casually. There's a matter of... a friend who wishes to get together with... another friend. These two friends wish to be romantically engaged and... well...
He was silenced as Phlox raised a hand.
Oh, don't worry, Captain, he said, happy as ever to offer assistance. Tell me, who is the lucky girl? It's T'Pol, isn't it? I always knew you two were meant to be together.
He would be a little shaky at first, but you'd get through your...
Doctor, it's not me and T'Pol.
Oh. Captain, you dog, you. Phlox joked, elbowing the Sam gently. Taking a young and naive girl like Ensign Mason. Why don't you leave Pothos with me for the night? I'm sure he won't appreciate the extra noise.
For God's sake, Phlox, it's not for me. It's for a...
friend. Sam was losing patience.
Of course it is, Phlox went to an open drawer marked Rarely Used Plot Devices to be later exploited by fanfiction writers.
He retrieved a small pill wrapped in a pastely-colored foil.
Just have your intended lover pop this in her mouth and she won't be able to keep her hands off you.
Sam took the pill and left the room mortified.
Meanwhile, at the waiting room of Dragon Rider...
So wait a minute.
Jonathan asked, stuffing back a burrito as they watched BattleBots. You mean there's actually a list of reasons why Kirk is better than Picard, yet neither of them have technically been born yet?
Exactly, Dragon Rider explained. You see, in TV time, your show is actually based about 200 years or so before the very first one. However, you do have the newest Star Trek, so you haven't done quite enough yet to be compared to Kirk or Picard.
Okay, so assuming I got a list, who would I be better than?
Well, Picard is one, but it doesn't take much to be better than Captain Picard. Hell, Captain Kangaroo is better than Captain Picard. Of course, you and Kirk will always be jockeying for the position, but I honestly think you'll be equal in that respect. No one really holds a candle to Brooks. Let's face it, he ruled towards the last few seasons of the series. You know everyone's going to argue about Captain Janeway until the end of time.
Okay, so what sets me apart from all the others? Archer threw back a bottle of Pepsi and went back to munching his burrito.
Thus far, none of the other captains have been interviewed on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Excellent.
Ah, the burning Bart scorched the Samurai 666. I win the bet.
DW sighed and got up to recite the entire Enterprise theme song backwards in Klingon.
Back on Enterprise.
Captain, are you sure this is a good idea? Trip asked pleadingly.
I need you two in there in case of an emergency, Sam insisted. Oh, Interpol, since you're going to be in there for a really long time, your nasal agent will wear off after a while. Take this pill. The doctor ensures me it will enhance the effectiveness of the agent.
Yes, Captain. DePaul took the pill, knowing full well she couldn't argue her way out of it.
Sam left the two in there in the enclosed room. Locked.
What is the point of this? Tripp asked angrily.
Isn't it obvious? DePaul replied. Captain Archer has clearly been replaced by another fictitious version of himself, also played by Scott Bakula, an act on behalf of fanfiction writer which does not wish to see the Enterprise fall in the same stereotypical traps as the previous four series. In addition, fanfiction writers abroad expect us to eventually get it on, which is another reason why the captain has slipped me this drug, which is clearly a powerful aphrodisiac.
Tripp took this in and thought about it for a second. Then he said, Nah, that's just a bunch of Vulcan gibberish.
Captain, I'm picking up a strange energy reading coming from the nebula, Malcolm reported.
On screen.
Outside, near the nebula, a starship blasted into reality and approached the Enterprise. It bore the Federation's signature and sported the name Time Ship Relativity.
It's approaching slowly, shields down. Lieutenant, fire all torpedoes at that vessel now, Sam ordered.
But Captain, it may be a...
Just do it, Lieutenant! I have a bad feeling about this.
All right by me, then. Malcolm let loose a volley of torpedoes, not really caring what the Captain's motivation was, just happy to exercise his trigger finger.
The ship blew up before it could make another move.
Yes! Excellent! Woohoo! A familiar voice yelled behind him. Sam looked up to see DW standing there.
Yay, we did it! He said happily.
We sure did, Captain! Hoshi spoke up. Oh, not you, Ensign. Everyone, I want you to meet my dear friend, Dragon Rider.
Sam introduced DW to a crew who simply stared oddly.
What's the matter with you people? Show a little hospitality.
Dragon Rider tapped Sam on the shoulder and whispered into his ear.
What? You're invisible? Why didn't you just tell me that in the first place?
Captain, Malcolm said slowly, beginning to wonder about the stability of their leader. Are you all right?
Yes, I'm fine, Malcolm, Sam rebutted. To Dragon Rider, he said, Okay, I did my task. Why haven't I leapt yet?
Well, there's this matter of T'Pol and Trip. They haven't...
Down below.
T'Pol finally got tired of Trip's excruciating odor. Having nothing else to do, she popped the pill just as Trip discovered a little button which caused the bed to jut out.
Hey, look at this!
Trip was interrupted as T'Pol spun him around and looked at him straight in the eye. In the room, an old song from the 20th century singer Barry White blared as the lights grew dim.
Subcommander?
T'Pol said something in her native language that must have resembled, Let's get it on. And threw the engineer to the bed.
From outside the secluded room, passerbys could hear a pained voice screaming, Oh my god!
Up above.
The leap occurred as security was escorting this captain to sickbay. Suddenly, Sam found himself in the living room of a typical suburban two-floor dwelling. He was standing over a fireplace with several items, including a matchbox, some thyme, and a quartz crystal. He got up and realized he was wearing women's clothing.
Here I go again, he muttered and looked in the mirror. Looking back at him was a red-haired girl. Willow?
An impatient voice shouted. Sam thought for a second.
Willow?
Oh, no. Ah, great, he muttered as his W appeared again. Oh, Sam, I should let you know, your series was canceled a long time ago, which means you're pretty much mine. I'm going to use you to solve just about every single problem myself and my fellow fanfiction writers have with our favorite shows, movies, and books. Sam muttered something about kicking ass if the word Harry Potter was ever mentioned, and went about completing his assignment.
A little epilogue. For the road.
Look, Malcolm, I told you I'm fine, Captain kept on insisting as they escorted them down to the corridor.
Of course you are, Captain, but I think you need a little break from commanding for a bit. All the stress is getting to you. Look, Malcolm, I told you I'm fine, the captain kept on insisting as they escorted them down the corridor. Of course you are, Captain, but I think you need a little break from commanding for a bit. All this stress is getting to you. Archer gave up as they turned a corner and saw Trip leaving a room. His coat open, his hair all messy and missing a boot. Oh, crap. T'Pol, I'm coming back in to get my boot. Now before...
Get in here, Commander.
The sound of a primitive growl was followed by Trip being yanked into the room and the door being firmly sealed shut.
Well, I will give this to Dragonwriter. Godspeed in trying to fix the internet with Sam Beckett. I also loved how he was against cliché. If you notice in the entire story, Sam Beckett didn't even say, oh boy, once the entire episode. So, there you have it. Coming up on this special Star Trek edition of Tensha's Internet Theater, another Star Trek fan fiction.
Times, Mr. Spock, when I think I should have been a librarian.
The job of librarian would be no less challenging, Captain, but it would undoubtedly be a lot less dangerous.
And now, a classic. A true classic. This story, it was on the internet, and it comes from the news groups. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the oldest story to have appeared on Pretentious Internet Theater, but with 4 episodes in, I'm pretty confident that this is going to be the oldest episode you're going to hear for quite some time. Shadows in the Mist. Enjoy. Pretentious Internet Theater presents Shadows in the Mist by Sandra Guzdick. Written in May of 1992. All was quiet in deep space as the Mammoth Galaxy-class starship cruised by at a healthy warp 4 speed. The bridge was staffed by its normal, familiar faces. The captain stood there with a view screen in awe, once again, of the beauty of the dark tapestry before him. Everything was calm. Too calm. The captain thought wryly that that alone was indicative of something big about to happen. He turned back to do some work in his ready room, and the booming voice of the security chief announced, Captain, sensors indicate that there's a vessel of unknown origin adrift in space off the port now approximately 500 megameters away. Captain smiled to himself.
Surprise, surprise.
Life signs, he queried, and turned on his heel for the command chair. Data piped up. None that we can detect. As he pulled down his uniform top, he commanded, On screen. The screen seemed to change in a star pattern only. It was a smaller shape in the lower right quadrant, which the captain ordered enlarged. What is it, sir? The voice of Deanna Troi wondered almost silently. I'm not familiar with any kind of this ship, Mr. Data. Analyze its structure and theorize on its function. The ship that appeared on the screen looked as if it were constructed by 2 stout cylinders fused together side by side, with 2 facet spheroids on each end. Seams ran the length and breadth of it, forming strange, intricate triangular patterns. Here and there, the hull was broken up by portals and marred by scars of wear and tear. All in all, the ship seemed centuries old, and no longer very spaceworthy.
Captain, I can find no match to the ship. However, it has no propulsion systems, no weapon systems, and little in the way of shielding. I can hypothesize it was ejected into space as space junk.
The energy readings we're getting are too high for simple space junk. Bellowed.
It's a miracle it's still in one piece, commented Will Waker from next to the counselor. Dana shook her head. It's very unusual. The captain sighed. You're right. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I want to know why. Number one, prepare an away team. As he tapped his communicator.
Dr. Crusher, report to transporter room 3 with a medical compliment. There may be some casualties to attend to.
The doctor's voice responded instantly. Acknowledged. Comprised of Riker, Troy, Crusher, and Geordi, the away team materialized inside an oddly dampened human ship. All was dark, save for the starlight. Geordi looked around in the survey of the fair-sized room. The others squinted and their irises adjusted to the dimness. Instinctively, the doctor pulled out a medical tricorder and held it before. Anything? Riker asked, his team in general. At that moment, the lights were on. I found the lights, announced Geordi, who had flipped a switch on the wall up like the old-fashioned light switches of centuries ago. They looked around to better see the place. The room was much smaller than the main bridge of the Enterprise. As triangular seams assembled those on the hull, to the dirt, walls were a beige color, though there was a large window in the largest wall. Something that was probably a door opposite of that. There was also a window to the stars outside an adjacent wall. The room was unkempt,
apparent even after considering the age of the ship. In one corner sat a heap of rubbish, including large diameter plastic rib pipe, a flashlight of 20th century design, and baby car seats? A bubblegum machine? I'm not getting any life signs in this room, Beverly chipped, interrupting the silence. Troy slid her hand along the console and grimaced at the dirt that had come off her fingers. Then she took notice of the console. It was simple in design. Three large buttons of green, red, and yellow. She wrinkled her brow. Geordi, I'm no engineer, but how could anything possibly run on just three buttons? Geordi had just thought the same thing. How primitive and shoddy the structure and design of the vessel was. Other than those three buttons, there didn't appear to be any other controls.
You got me, Counselor. Riker spoke up.
It seems to be a satellite of some sort. Though we're light years from any system or M-class planets, even satellites have more controls than this.
Beverly had been scanning the walls. I'm reading something behind these doors, some sort of energy source. I think we should get to it, see if it's dangerous.
She turned to face her companions. The question is, how are we to open the doors?
The foursome looked to the simplistic control panel, then to each other.
It's got to be one of these buttons, Geordi said, voicing the thoughts of everyone's present.
Which one? Pondered Diana. Assuming one of these buttons is for the door, what are the other two for? And how do we know that the other two buttons isn't the cause of the total abandonment of this satellite?
But there's still that tricorder reading, Beverly remarked kindly. We have to get to it. Make sure it isn't a threat.
So which will it be? Geordi asked. Fortunately, the matter was taken out of their heads when a surge of power buzzed through the room. A red light began to flash, and what sounded like an alarm klaxon began to ring. All three control buttons began to flash, and they looked to each other as if to say, what do we do?
It seems as if all systems, scanty they are back online, Geordi explained.
A female voice, pleasant, not unlike the Enterprise's own computer voice, announced that something was about to occur in 10 seconds. What that something was, they couldn't make sense of.
Enix sees the seasoned Starfleet officer. What do we do? Troy wondered.
What did that voice say? Riker queried. I don't know, Troy said desperately.
Sign. It said something sign, Geordi commented.
It isn't a threat, or else the Enterprise's sensors would have told them, and they would have pulled us out of here, Riker reminded.
Calmly, Beverly reached over and pushed the red button. The sound and lights continued, but the door slid open.
They all looked at her in amazement. With a smile, she said, it was just a hunch.
The noise died down, and the light dimmed back to normal.
Riker's communicator buzzed.
Number one, is everything going all right down there?
Was the captain.
Aye, sir. We've just discovered...
As Beverly cleared her throat playfully, Riker corrected with a smile.
Dr. Crusher has just discovered how to open the door. We're going to investigate a high-energy reading now.
Be careful, Number One. We don't know what's down there.
Understood. Riker out.
Door had opened to reveal a long corridor of numbered doors, which were successfully opening.
Geordi said meekly, it is getting weirder and weirder.
Data materialized beside the four of them. The captain thought I might be of assistance down here.
Diana clapped her hand over her heart. Oh, Data, you frightened me.
They went down the long hall.
Tricorders alive and flashing. Riker's brow furrowed as he picked up what appeared to be the skeleton of a small canine. It was red-orange. Certainly not organic.
Data, you couldn't have showed up at a better time, Riker thrust his find at him.
What is this?
Data took it and turned it over his hand. After a few moments of analysis, he stated, it would appear that there is no known source for this thing, although it does highly resemble a chlorine shell beast.
He handed it to the two women, who in turn scrutinized it.
Come on, let's go, Riker said, indicating the end of the hall.
At that moment, he noticed Geordi fawning over a second find.
LaForge, what have you got there? As Riker crouched down, he saw exactly what it was.
His grandmother had had one. Why, he remembered her using it. A nostalgic grin on his face. A waffle iron?
They looked to each other. Geordi muttered,
curiouser and curiouser.
Coming to the final door,
a large, round door like that of a bank vault, it seemed to reveal a darkened room. On the wall directly before them, there was a mammoth screen upon images were projected, and the room had rows of seats. Beverly waved her tricorder around and announced, there's the energy source. She pointed to the projection booth.
This must be some sort of theater, Riker mused.
Data spewed his usual 2 cents. This is a motion picture cinema, as indicated by the pictures on the screen. Motion pictures became popular in the early to mid-20th century, and though it had rained considerably, people still enjoy it today as a form of entertainment.
Beverly smiled, her eyes dreamy. Yes, I've seen Casablanca and The Wizard of Oz.
Data looked at the screen, analyzing the actors and the dialogue. His brow furrowed in a special android way.
It would seem that this movie, as they were called in the vernacular, is what's known as B-grade. Obscure actors, thin plots, and cheap, flimsy sets.
Diana laughed in spite of herself.
So what is a B-grade movie cinema doing all the way out here in space?
Riker looked to her, looking very much like a mad scientist.
Said, push the button, Troy.
Copyright 1992 by Sarah Gustick. Standard disclaimers about Paramount and threats of death for plagiarism apply. Truly a paradox wrapped within an enigma, using a riddle for a bow. I loved the Hitchcockian elements that slowly pulled the veil on the crossover. Yet, the story wasn't a crossover at the same time. One also has to wonder about the statement that Riker made at the end of that story. Can something remain in our pop culture this popular, or at least popular enough for Riker to have seen it, that can stand the test of time of 400 years? Ponder that while you see your movie. In the meantime, this is Andrew Cook, reminding you that there is much drama on the internet, and only the best makes pretentious internet theater. Pleasure is all yours.